Well, hello, hello everyone. How are you doing? Good? Yes. Party yesterday, okay? Thanks for coming. This is really great. I bet you that you couldn't sleep, right? Okay, so a couple of things at the beginning. Chop, chop, chop. This is my fourth session within this week. So if you haven't seen me presenting before, of course, quick introduction. If you did, really welcome back. Today supposed to be a cool day. Let's see what we can do within the hardening. First of all, let me introduce myself. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz, and I am from Poland. As you see by my complex surname, and I'm working for the company that is called Secure, and that particular company is a pretty small company, 8 people on board, having a really tiny offices in New York, Dubai, and of course the place that I'm originating from, which is Warsaw. And what we are doing for the living, it's nothing but penetration testing and also different kinds of security-related consultancy. Everybody within the company is quite a geek. And this session, of course, I would also like to thank for the team because what we were and what I will be presenting, it's a bunch of different kinds of really interesting vulnerabilities that will never be able to be presented if not the teamwork. So I'm really happy to present it to you. And we're going to discuss, of course, pros and cons of the different kinds of situations that we've got, how we are able to approach to harden the systems. Of course, whenever we are thinking about hardening infrastructure, it is a pretty generic process, isn't it? Like hardening. What does it really mean? Of course, we can think that it's like proactive approach, which is definitely true, but it's also a part of monitoring thing. So we are able to, of course, monitor infrastructure and listen if there is someone nasty coming. And the goal of this session is to present you, not the obvious one, I hope, approaches, tips, how we are able to harden our infrastructure. If you want something obvious, you can always go to the internet and type in browser, top 10 things you can do to your server, hardening. And then you can find this all beautiful lists with all these group policy settings that you can set up. But this session is about a little bit something else. It's about the interesting things that whenever we are doing pen tests, we think it would be fantastic if on the top of the obvious hardening with checkboxes, check, 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 we could apply a little bit more to the field. And what is even better, that solution that I will be talking about are very practical, and they're pretty easy to implement in the infrastructure, as long as, of course, we know what we want. As long as, of course, you are in the mood for doing a little bit more within the hardening field. Okay, guys, so let's begin. Ready? Oh, really? Are you ready? Yes, this is great. Thanks so much. Today's a Halloween, come on guys, today's gonna be party. I mean, at least I'm going to the party, so I don't know, how about you? Anyway, our session is divided into two parts. It's gonna be the network-oriented part, and it's gonna be the system-oriented part, because a hardening approach is completely different when we are discussing the protocols and whenever we are discussing the system-related issues. As usual, I'm recommending the tools, and as usual, a small disclaimer, please do not run the tools with the raccoon icon on the production environment, period. Raccoon is this kind of tiny, cute, nasty animal with the tail, yes? And it's eating everything, even cats. So basically, we don't want those tools in our infrastructure. And what we see over here, the defrag tools, it's also a very good resource to learn how things are working in the operating system, also from the security perspective. Definitely recommended if you're gonna be in the mood for, I'm gonna do something, but I don't know what to do. Watch the defrag tools. Andrew Richards, it's amazing. I'm a really huge fan of him. So, let's begin. Hardening of the operating system, it's a little bit like a car in the jungle. So the thing is that, as you see, well, this is our infrastructure. And we've got also monkeys. And these particular monkeys, I mean, let's analyze it. They're not quite smart, aren't they? They're like very focused though. They're very like, ooh, I see the open hole, I wanna get in. So the approach with the infrastructure and the infrastructure hardening should be pretty much similar, likewise protecting from the monkeys. If you're going to leave the window open, not only one monkey will come and stick their limb, but she's going to call for friends. And you're going to end up with a situation like this. So whenever we are having approach within the hardening, it's not only preventing the whole thing, so keeping the, of course, door, keeping the doors and windows closed, but also if you see the monkey that is working on a handle, you're going to be like, uh-huh, monkey is working on handle. Let's watch this handle for the moment, and let's see if the monkey will manage to get inside or not. Maybe we are secure enough so that she or he or whatever the monkey is will never get inside. So whenever we are thinking, of course, about the whole idea, there is a bunch of areas, obviously, that we can touch. So let's dig in to the network approach. First of all, monitor DNS queries. The thing is, what I mean by this, it's not only that we should just watch them. No. First of all, let's talk about the DNS protocol in general. DNS protocol, of course, is a clear text protocol. It's a very easy to be spoofed protocol. It's vulnerable to something that we call DNS spoofing. It's not really a matter if the DNS spoofing will work or not in our infrastructure, because if someone gets in, like plugs in the computer, whatever, somewhere inside the infrastructure, DNS spoofing just works. It's not a matter if we are vulnerable to the DNS spoofing. No, you are. If you have not implemented, of course, DNSSEC, which is a direct protection for the DNS spoofing, because everything is based on the clear text protocol. Of course, whenever we are thinking about anything more, how we are able to implement different kinds of monitoring strategies, we need to think about how DNS works. So obviously, and I don't have to explain what DNS is, but whenever we are communicating from the host, so from the customers, from the client's workstation, of course we are communicating and asking our DNS server for the name. And that DNS server is forwarding that particular query somewhere else. And eventually, whenever we do have an answer back, we've got an answer back within the IP address. And the next communication that is happening, it's actually happening through the IP address. So the DNS is kind of like in a very good position because it resolves the name once, perfect, check, and then we are communicating over IP. And here comes the very important question. Whenever you've got log from the firewall, and whenever you've got even the log from the client's machine, what kind of information do you find over there? Usually, it is an IP address, because communication is going on like that. So here comes the thing. If you are like, communication with this IP address is kind of awkward, I would like to have a look, what is this about? I mean, is this like China or Russia or what's that? Or Poland, for example? Yeah, I would like to know what is this IP address about. So here comes the question, how are we going to check for that? With what? Who is? Okay, good point, yes? You can always, of course, do that. But what if the owner is the IP provider? Yes? Yes? Oh, exactly. So this is the one thing. Another thing is that obviously we're going to do the web DNS query, whatever that is about. But you know what is funny? That there is a huge, big idea that is totally messed up with a DNS protocol, that is whenever you ask someone, please tell me, what is the resolution, what is the rev DNS, when I type the IP address and I get the name, I can have the appropriate one, but you know what is the important thing? I get the one that is set up by these bad guys over there. If they want to answer me something wrong, no problem. If I'm being attacked through some specific IP address, and that resolves to Microsoft.com, is this really Microsoft.com, or is just the guys playing on me? Yes? So just as a reference, because I was thinking about, of course, explaining the whole idea, so this is going to be a little bit more applicable, and I came into a very simple conclusion that DNS, it's a little bit like a blonde. And the question is why? So it's a little bit like this. When you've got a blonde, and I know that blonde junks are kind of awkward, but and I'm blonde as well, so maybe I should not really laugh at myself, but it's a little bit like that, you know? There's always some through in it. So whenever, let's say, some person takes the phone, and I want to call Anna, So I'm searching for Anna in my phone, and I see Anna, and I see what's the Anna's mobile phone. So what I do, instead of calling Anna, that I know, I mean, this is her, and this is her mobile phone. So I take her mobile phone, and I call Anna, and I'm asking, who am I talking to? Isn't it like that? A little bit. So having this in mind, I would like to talk about, of course, how we are able to maintain the history of the resolved names through within our DNS server. Why the DNS server is not knowledgeable? So let's have a look. Basically, what I'm going to do, first, let's get into the simple demonstration. That simple demonstration is going to be related, of course, to the resolving a different kinds of names. Okay, let me do that. Very good. So first of all, I would like to show you one thing. The DNS particularly, is so knowledgeable that it provides us a very interesting type of the resource records. I'm going to bring two things. First of all, what I'm going to do, I'm going to set the server because I would like to start my queries from a certain server, FNS1, and then it's going to be 42.pl. Very good. And I'm going to ask, let's see if everything works fine. And I'm going to ask in a moment, just a second. And I'm going to ask for the moment, there is some timeout. Okay, so let's dig in and let's see what we can do. And so now it should be fine. Very good. And now I'm going to ask about the domain. So it's going to be, in my case, let's do the zone transfer. So it's going to be L, S, minus T. And then it's going to be demo, secure.us. And I'm going to specify the TXT record. So I said that the DNS is a little bit knowledgeable. Let's see what we can do. And it displays me, basically, the username and passwords of the users that are on the backside. By the way, I'm kidding. Oof, right? Okay. I'm really kidding, yes? It's okay. Really. It's going to be worse, by the way, but that's okay. So, what's my point? My point is a little bit different, though. I just wanted to wake you up, yes? Okay? Now it's better? You've got these things in your belly right now? Good. So let's dig in. So basically, what I will do, I'm going to use my DNS server to play a little bit with a different kinds of queries. And the first thing that I'm going to do, I'm going to ask about my DNS server. So as you see, it is 10.10.2.10, about malware, demo, secure.us. And of course, if our DNS server forwarding that request is able to respond that kind of traffic, let's see basically why it's not. Oh, there is something with the, apparently with the network. Yeah, exactly. So let me fix it. Mm-hmm. Our network, I saw at the very beginning of the presentation, it was down for the small moment. So that's why my, now it's going to be fine. My virtual machine lost the connection. So we can do the same story right now. And of course, what we see over here, is that we've got a certain IP address, yes? So what I'm talking about is that whenever you are monitoring the communication through the IP address, when we want to see what kind of IP address is this, and this is very simple, I know, but let's have a look, yes? I got the information that it's not really malware demo secure US, but it is actually the Cello, which is clearly an internet provider. So who is sitting over there within this IP address? We completely don't know. Whatever the owner wanted to put over there, they did. So now what I'm going to do, on the DNS server, I'm going to start a pretty interesting stuff. And that's going to be the tool that we wrote pretty recently. So it's brand new and so on. And that particular tool, it is the DNS consumer. Well, we call it DNS mon. And that particular DNS consumer, what it does when I run it just like that, it's going to gather the history of the things that we have asked for so that it was resolved for us, so that next time you're going to ask about RevDNS, you're going to get the answer from that history. Isn't it nice? Now we know the answer. transfer from the history, not from the bad guys. We resolved this name, so everything was okay. Okay, so let's begin. What kind of stuff, of course, we can see over here. So I am running right now the consumer, and I'm going to go to the client. So let me take this out. So I'm going to actually leave it a little bit behind. So I'm going to take this out. And what I'm going to do over here on the client side, I'm going to do ipconfig flush DNS. Oh, one more time, flush DNS. Okay, very good. And I'm going to ask for the same name one more time. So in our case, it's going to be malware-demo-secure.us. Our server resolved it, but on the back side, you can see that we have actually added the read zone for the name that we are resolving. So now, what we're going to do, very, very simply, on the client side, so let's dig into the client, I'm going to do the same query type for the ref, like this, paste, and then I should get the answer that is correct. So this is how it should work. DNS is very, very poor from how it works perspective. It should be at least a little bit intelligent. So what we are thinking about right now is that whenever we do have the situation that we do have the firewall lock or any kind of edge lock, of course we can try to do the ref DNS all the time. But the thing is, what we're going to hear? Nothing really that we can rely on. Let me go to the full screen mode and let me show you something. Here I got the regular firewall lock. The firewall lock looks like this. Yes, I exported it from the firewall. It's exactly Ctrl-C, Ctrl-V. And I got here the whole communication. How can you tell me really what in this particular case it is 164, 40, 241 and so on? You're going to do the ref. But with this approach, what we will do, what I'm going to do actually, I'm going to use our parser and I'm going to parse this lock against that cache that I'm maintaining right now on the DNS side. So let me begin. So DNS, log parser, and here we go, of course, everything with all the files. I'm going to, of course, play with WF parser, and then the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to specify the input firewall lock, and then output, let's call it tehet.txt, enter. And what it does, it takes a small moment, it resolves the name using the new cache that we are maintaining. So if the DNS server managed to resolve the name, we already know that. I mean, he resolved the name. It's one-to-one operation. So now we're asking, please tell me, have you resolved the name for this IP address? Or you did, okay, so give me the name what you resolved. So now, what we are able to check very quickly, so we've got two files over here. One is called tehet, another one is tehet.nx. Tehet.nx is the place that's going to be pretty juicy, and it might be sometimes even nasty. But let's go to the good one first. So as you see over here, this is the log that is parsed. Let me go to the interesting place maybe. And here we've got, for example, deploy-static-akamai-technologies.com. And we do have also our malware demo secure US and a couple of other things. Very good. So now we know what we are talking to. But the next thing, let's open the evil thing. How many times it really happens that without resolving the name first, you've got a communication? And you may be like, okay, in our infrastructure it happens. Great. Then you will have here your IP address that you are aware about. So it's not malicious. But what about the things that are not really using the domain names, but they are communicating directly using the IP addresses? You're going to spot them exactly, bang, over here. Because DNS, of course, stores that information. Interesting? Yes, thank you. You must be from Poland, clearly. We've got our internals in the audience. Okay, good, good. So basically, whenever we are, of course, thinking about that kind of approach, the whole concept about the DNS is, of course, to work on the data that we've got and to analyze it properly. Let's dig in. The next thing that sounds like, whoa, pretty generic tip, it's to sanitize your data. What do I clearly mean by this? And let me actually ask the question first. And because it's a morning session and it's a Halloween, I got something interesting for you, so stay focused. And the question is, what was the name of piece of software that was affected by the shell shock bug? So who's at it over there? You did. Okay, guys. So I got something for you. This is basically the mug heater. If you plug it in and it does not heat, we will contact you in a few seconds, we promise. I really mean it. Okay. I know you, by the way, so really be careful. You know, just a friend's advice. Okay. So good. So what we are talking about over here, whenever we are, of course, playing with the standard data sanitization, just to wrap up the subject, there's a couple of things that we should have a look at. First of all, we need to understand what kind of systems we are using and what kind of data we are processing. So basically, whenever we are, for example, playing with any kind of web applications, whenever the input is not sanitized properly, we are obviously, for example, vulnerable to things like SQL injection. And within the SQL injections, we've got a single quote, we've got dash dash. So this particular technology, this particular language, it's described by using different kinds of special characters, right? The same stuff is whenever we are using the tags, like for example, the script tag. For the cross-site scripting, it's quite special, isn't it? So whenever we are not sanitizing the data properly, we can become a victim of basically misusage of the language just because we've got special characters that they are existing. So what is the thing? Well, here comes the whole story. The shell shock was pretty interesting, how it was working. And shell shock basically was, targeting different kinds of devices, different kinds of solutions. But the question is, do we have, for example, the shell shock for Windows? We do. Yes. Very good. Thank you. So I can tell you one thing. What I'm going to show you right now, it is the tiny problem that we've got within the cmd.exe. And that particular problem, it's just because we've got a problem with parsing, with data sanitization. And we're not the only team, by the way, that was working on it. When there was a shell shock bug that was discovered, there were many teams that jumped on board. I know one, a very good team from Belgium, and they describe it within their blog. So if you are searching for more information about what I'm showing, you can also find that information in the internet. So there's a lot of people that were finding the same thing simultaneously, which is quite cool. So what I'm going to do, first of all, what I'm going to show you, it is the tiny website that basically, and it is basically the server, that administrator from that server decided to process logs and decided to monitor the user agent strings. So as you see, I call this agentos. I think it's in Spanish. At least it sounds like. Basically, we are monitoring all of the things that people are using whenever they are coming from the certain place. Okay, guys, so here comes, of course, the very, very simple question. How we are able to monitor that kind of information, and is the sanitization appropriate? So what I will do over here, and this is the client, so let me go and go to the full screen mode. I'm going to ask, well, just simply, very, very simply, in this case, 10.10.10. 202, maybe not Agentos, but just like that. This is just a regular website, yes? So I made a query. And that particular query is going to be pretty soon, of course, appearing in this log over here. We can do Control F5, and we can see if this log is appearing over here. What I have running in the back, so it will be not that fast immediately, is the scheduled task that is taking the query and it's parsing it, and it's putting into the text file that I got on the website. Thanks to this administrator, is able to monitor all the stuff. So we can eventually, for example, run that particular scheduled task, and we can see if this kind of stuff is refreshing on the website. Let's see, yes? So the query should come in the moment, okay? And let me open it on the new tab eventually, and Control F5, and we don't have the query coming yet. So basically, the next thing that I will do, it's going to come. The next thing that I will do, I'm going to make a little bit more interesting query from the client. So let's see what we can do about that. So within the client, where I was opening the website, let me actually do the full screen, so view the full screen mode. I'm going to do the simple wget query. So let me actually open up the log file that I got. I'm just going to wget. So let me go to tools. And good. And it should be here. Let me go over here. Oh, yeah, let me search for it. Yes. Oh, come on. Where is this? I see the wget over here. Very good. But what I'm searching for is actually the very specific query type. So let me dig in and let's see where is this, because I had it clearly over here, yes? So I'm just going to quickly search for it. And it was the tehet query. Okay, so let's see. Oh, yeah, I got it here. I'm faster than search. Good. So I got here a simple thing. That is the simple, of course, query that we will run against that server. So I'm going to quit this particular thing, and I'm going to get into the tools. And within the tools, of course, I'm going to run the command, because this is where I get wget, punk. And of course, we made a simple query, yes? That particular query, we can also monitor if it's coming on the server, yes? So we can, of course, do the control F5 over here and see if this particular log is coming. Let's see. We can try to trigger it. It might be the case that in IIS particularly, so we've got here IIS, the logs are not saved yet to the disk. Let's see. So here we've got sites, and the sites should be clearly running. Okay, very good. So we can, so this is our server. It's responding, of course. And we can dig in into the logs, inetpub, and here logs, and then log files, and we can see if we do have this kind of queries here, yes? So we do have some queries that actually happened. So eventually what we can do the IIS reset, and we can speed up the loading the logs eventually. Let me do that, IIS. It's just because the logs are buffered, so reset, and then let's see, of course, if our logs will come to place. So IIS reset, successfully resetted, and let's dig in. The folder with what we need, and here we should have a little bit more logs. Oh, moment. This is this one. Okay, yeah. So we do have clearly everything over here processed. Very good. So what I will do basically, I'm going to go, of course, to the Windows 8.1 client, and I'm going to do a little bit more interesting query. And that particular query, it's going to be containing the command to execute. But before I do that, actually, I'm going to set up the certain connection type on the client. It's going to be netcat minus L, and it's going to be on this port number 666. Yes. Okay, so let's see if everything is going to be processed correctly by the server. And that particular administrator is just processing the logs, but he does not sanitize it correctly. I'm going to explain you everything. I can imagine that at the beginning it might be a little bit difficult. So I'm going to, of course, run this particular encoded command. But what is this doing? First of all, what we're going to do, we're going to decode it in PowerShell. So I'm going to run the PowerShell ISA, and I'm going to show you, of course, how we are able to decode that particular stuff. So this is the one. Run selection, and what it does in the decoded form, this is the one. Invoke web request. We are downloading the webcat from somewhere, and then we are saving it into the temp, and then we are starting the process, netcat, and we are connecting back to us. Yes? So this is basically the whole scenario. So the question is, of course, what we are able and how we are able to process with this. Okay, guys, so what I'm going to do in here, so this is very good. I'm going to run this command, and I'm going to execute it, of course, against certain server. Let me do that. Okay. Very good. Let me do this on this side. I mean, it's a lot of things to work with. So I'm going to basically copy this body. Let me, of course, process it. So this is the body, and then let me execute it within the command against that guys over here. So I'm just going to put it somewhere, yes, because in our case, of course, it was in tools, And this is where we've got the wget. Here we go. So I'm going to paste this. And then what I'm going to do, of course, the question is, of course, if this query is going to be parsed. Let's see if it has worked, because it's a brand new thing. And if we are listening to within the netcat over here, yeah, we can, of course, check out how that's going to work. Yes? So let's see how we're going to connect back and if that's going to happen. So what we can see on the server side and what we can kind of enforce within our attack is that we can run the scheduled task because it runs basically every minute over here. And let's see, of course, if we're going to get the connection back. Hopefully, yes. If not, then we will still get an idea, of course, how does it work. So I'm going to go to the server and let me, of course, check out and let's run this particular stuff. Right now, I just run the scheduled task to parse it. And right now, we've got someone working remotely, working like this on the remote server. The question is, what just happened? Because this is kind of awkward, like, okay, she's running some logs, putting some encoded commands somewhere and so on. Simplicity, it's a key to explanation. So let's run the command prompt and let's begin into, of course, how does it work? And I'm going to use a very Polish names, and the reason why is because the very basic explanation in Poland, we are using the, like, Alice and Bob type, but we are using Alice, which is Ala, and cat, which is a cat. So let's do this, like, very, very simply. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to specify the variable that equals cat, yes? So one variable is going to be having a certain name. Okay. So this is very easy. But when we do set ala, we're able, of course, to display the content of what was in set. That's how set works. The next thing that I'm going to do echo and percent ala percent. And then, let's see, we've got a variable. Very obvious, right? Very easy. Okay, so now here comes the difficult part. What we're going to do is, of course, set ala, and I'm going to specify a little bit different variable, and in our case it's going to be cot, and then ampersand ping local host. How that's going to work, yes? So it works like this, and that's okay, because ampersand is combining two commands all together. So the next thing that I'm going to do this in a little bit tricky way. I don't want to combine two commands together. I want this whole string to be set as a variable. So what am I supposed to do? Not really. The rooftop. Yes? So now, what's going to happen is that ampersand is going to be treated as just a regular character, right? Simple. Just a regular character. I don't want it to be processed in a certain way, yes? Okay, good. And here comes the whole thing. Of course, if I do this like that, I can display set ala, and this is okay, because this is how I want it to be saved, just a regular character. But here comes the shell shock, and that's what I did. And that particular shell shock works like this, echo, and then percent ala percent. And instead of interpreting this as a regular character, I'm going to execute the commands. Yeah, wow is a good word, thank you. Isn't it simple, by the way? Very. Conclusion is very simple, it's coming out of that. Sanitize your data. Of course, that sounds very generic, but whenever you are using and processing some technologies, some language, some documents, parsing some data, input information, make sure that you clearly know what kind of characters are special. And in this case, the problem is in cmd.exe and how cmd.exe processes the information that is given, obviously, from echo. Echo does not parse it, does not give it as a regular character. It gives it as a command. And that's basically what was the problem with the original shell shock that we've been playing with. Interesting so far? Yay, very good, very good. Okay, so the next thing that we're going to play with is actually pretty interesting stuff. And this is the tool that is pretty new. And this particular tool, it's nothing but the Sysmon. So what I mean by this is that actively monitoring our server makes so much sense whenever, of course, we know what to search for. But what about the solution that's going to report to you every executable that you are ever running within the infrastructure? What about that? That would be pretty cool. Not to prevent, but to monitor. And what is even more, monitor if things are signed, trusted, and so on. We've got a very new tool that is written by Mark Rusinovich and colleagues that is called Sysmon, of course. Sysmon is a free tool. I can even clearly right now tell you that it's a fantastic tool and it has a fantastic recommendation from our team. The reason why we are saying like this is because it works very smartly. What it does, it is actually a kernel mode driver and the related service, and that kernel mode driver is before the stage where the processes are created. So when the process is about to be created, it captures the whole thing and it monitors the process creation function that we've got, so the event that is happening in operating system, and then it intercepts it, and then it's like, ah, ha, 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 you want to create. I'm going to log it first, and now you can. So it's like this. It's not preventing things from running, but it's helping out, of course, to dig in what kind of stuff we've got running within the operating system. Very lightweight, very, very lightweight. We already have the customers, and we know also a couple of guys that are already implementing this to monitor the whole server's environment in the infrastructure. Very cool. And if you centralize the logs, which we're going to talk about, it's working like a charm. So how does it work? Is it easy to implement? Not very easy, but it works nicely. So let's see what kind of stuff, of course, we can have with this. So, very good. So what I'm going to do, basically, let's go to the, not this one, but this one, the server. And let's dig in into the whole scenario. How does it work? First of all, here, of course, let me go to the sysmon etw events. We've got sysmon.exe. Sysmon.exe, this is what you download from the Microsoft webpage. When you want to install Sysmon, it's actually unbelievably easy. You take sysmon.exe, and then, so sysmon.exe, and then you run it minus E, and you specify how we're going to monitor files by the file hashes, what kind of hashes we're going to calculate, MD5. It's super robustly fast. So, of course, in my case, it is already installed, so I just want to show you how to do it, and then it's installed, and then we can proceed. Very good. So what it does right now, it monitors operating system, and now we are able, of course, to listen to the ETW, event tracing for Windows, and to see and centralize eventually what kind of types of operations we are monitoring. First of all, it's a process creation. Second thing that we've got, it is monitoring network connections. And another pretty good thing that we've got, it is, of course, monitoring the file changes. So if the file is changing, you will know that. Isn't it that we were all the time missing a solution like that, that is for free? It's like this. And of course, the kernel mode driver works because it is signed by Microsoft, so it can work within the kernel mode. So this is really also nice. OK, let's dig in. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to run the system ETW events consumer. This is the tool that you don't get. You don't download it. We wrote it. We wrote it for the purpose of this presentation to show you how it works. Because, I mean, if I show you the event logs that are just appearing, wow, what a fancy demo. Yes? Let's understand that. So, of course, what I'm running right now, the events consumer, our tool, is that whenever I'm going to start any new process, so let's start the command prompt one more time, what it does, it gives me the information about the process that is started. By the way, since we've got this tool, it's very easy to write it, yes? Since we've got this tool, it's hard to live without it. I must tell you, it's like, isn't it really interesting? Like, whenever you start any kind of executable, there is something also starting, and you want to know exactly what's that. And I mean, you got this knowledge. So what we, since then, do, we actually, whenever we work, we've got it always running in the back. And it's like, oh, let's read something interesting. You can read either about situation in Russia or event log. Yes, so, And that's never too much. It's changing. Okay. And we've got something more. SVC host and con host and a couple of other things that are running in our operating system. Okay. How do we calculate hashes? Let's dig in. I want to show you, of course, the whole story. Now we've got, for example, analyze user agents.bat. that is running. So this is my shell shock thing that I was showing before. This is the scheduled task that is running every minute. And my script, I don't store hashes. That's why we display this in red. Yes? It's like that. So let's dig in and let's have a look at what we can do. So first of all, I'm going to go to, of course, Sysmon ETW events. And here, I got the possibility to generate hashes. So what I will get to, actually, let me go to Sysmon ETW, and I get a file. This is also our tool. You can write the tool as well. It's very simple, yes? It's file hashes. You can do this with PowerShell if you want, yes? This particular tool, the fill hashes, it's calculating the hashes about that certain Windows operating system or certain directory or anything like that. For example, I got here unsigned tool. If I run it just like this, have a look, here it's going to appear in red. So I'm running the unsigned tool. Mm-hmm. I already managed the hash, so now it's green. But if I, for example, haven't had the hash, then the tool would be red. And how we are able to generate the hashes? Very, very simple. So let's, of course, do that. This fill hashes, it's working on a certain directory as a parameter. So if I got some tools in the folder, let's run it. It right now run the, and for example, our tool is also not trusted. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? Sysmon ETW events and the fill hashes we don't trust. Anyway, funny. So here we've got the cool PDF reader and MemoPath. And this is something that is basically in our case. So let me do Control C. It is generated into hashes. So we can do Notepad and hashes. And these are the hashes for these two tools. What we can do right now, we can add it to the major hash database where the tool is running, clearly where the tool is running. So we can basically put it over here, and we've got the hashes txt, and I could, if I want, add it over here, and my tool is using those hashes to, of course, display me information about the known or unknown files. Okay, guys, the next thing that I wanted to show you is basically a pretty interesting scenario, because I would like to, I'm going to reboot the machine right now, I would like to present to you the monitoring of the boot process. So I'm going to restart the whole thing. So this is the first thing. Sysmon service is running underneath, not this that you see. Sysmon has a service, so it's going to be running. And after the reboot, what I'm going to do, I'm going to run basically the tool that allows me to generate graphs. What was the situation that we got whenever we were running things in operating system? Good for malware analysis, good for your knowledge, good for anything that if you ask yourself the question, how, what kind of stuff is running in operating system, the answer is this, yes? So let's dig in, of course, to the whole scenario. We're gonna, of course, wait for this for the moment when my operating system reboots. And then what I'm gonna run is another tool using the GraphVis module. It's an additional module that you can download from the internet, and I'm going to generate the PDF with a nice looking graphs. So it's going to be like that. Of course, as I mentioned, Sysmon is free, so you can download this from the Microsoft website as well. Come on, let's boot. Eventually we will be back to this, but it's going to work like a charm, so everything should be okay. So this is basically the whole situation. One thing using this opportunity, of course, when we are rebooting, we are also able to monitor the situations whenever we've got the process that is elevated. So when the process changes its own token, when it changes the token, so for example, the parent process has a different process than the child, this is quite a strange situation. Probably someone did run as, probably someone elevated, yes? And this is this kind of difference in tokens that we've got. This is also, of course, monitored, and we are displaying it in a little bit different way. So let's dig in. Secured, administrator, password, a very difficult one, yes. So let's see what we can do, and that's going to be a very fast demonstration. So I'm going to do the full screen. Let me run the console, cmd, bunk, and then let's go to the another place. So it's a Sysmon, in our case, graphs. And I'm going to, of course, this Sysmon log analyzer generates me, maybe I could even download, this is my backup, because I was practicing if everything works but everything's going to work right now. Everything is very much new that you see, because Sysmon is new. So I'm going to, of course, run, in our case, Sysmon log analyzer, and what it's going to analyze us is the situation during the reboot. And that's what it did. I got here the process sessions.pdf. Let me, of course, I got a tiny free in the tools folder, PDF, cool PDF reader, whatever. And I'm going to load this file. So let's do that. So this is the process sessions, open, very good. And what it shows us, let's enlarge it a little bit, is the whole situation, or eventually I could even copy this. Oh, okay. It's the whole situation that was actually happening during the reboot. So this is a really nice thing, because this graph shows us the dependencies in between the processes. Let me speed up the performance. Now it's better. Mm-hmm. And very good. And now we can see what was actually starting what. So this is a pretty big PDF, yes? And we can see that, for example, let's do it. Sorry. Normally it displays properly, but let me take this out. And let me use the normal PDF reader, which in my case is going to be just Foxit. Ta-ta-ta-ta. You! Yes. Not that I'm criticizing what we saw, but, you know, yeah. And this is nice. And we see clearly what was actually launching what, yes? So we've got, for example, Netcat that was running as a scheduled task. This is the moment I was actually running the Sysmon log analyzer. It was started from CMD, and CMD was started from Explorer, and Explorer was started from user init, yes? So malware analysis is perfect with this, or in general, your knowledge about how things are working in operating system, yeah? So GraphViz, by the way, module, it is for free. So it's working like that. Okay, guys. So the next thing that we will be playing with, it is a pretty interesting thing that is related, so let me dig in further, that is related to, in our case, of course, web server configuration. And whenever we are hardening the web server, of course, there is a bunch of generic rules that I wrote on the slide that we should always follow. First of all, what we should always think is that the application spool identity, however that is, should be very limited, because this is how the requests are processed within the server side. So if someone makes a malicious request, then, of course, it's going to be running within the application spool identity. So I got something interesting to tell you. Because with our experience, we have seen a bunch of professional solutions that are converting, let's say, docx to PDF. Very often online, you've got this kind of converters. And these converters are actually loading underneath the winword.com, and we're running things through com, as a com, and that means that whatever we've got within this .x file is going to be processed as if it was the regular Word document. Where is the threat? Macros. What we've noticed, by the way, that whenever you start WinWord, basically as a com on the web server, what it is happening is that the macros are always running. So we decided to leverage this a little bit. Just a little bit. And what I would like to show you is the whole idea regarding the application spool identity, how does it work, and how this is basically affecting our server. Okay, let's do that. So the first thing that I'm going to do, I'm going to launch my virtual machine. That's going to be our web server. And that particular virtual machine, it is, of course, running view, full screen mode. It is running this ultimate Word to PDF converter. And that particular ultimate Word to PDF converter, of course, the administrator did a terrible thing. Application pools, convert, is running as a local system. Yes? Terrible. The reason why I'm showing you this, just to show you the result. So, of course, we will never do that. Of course. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to use the demo one. This is the document with the macro, so open. And then I'm going to convert it. So let's do that. What's going to happen, actually, one more thing, is that, perfect, let me copy this one, let me close it, and let me query, of course, the whole scenario. So here we've got some Mimikatz output. Let me delete it. The reason why I'm going to delete it, just to show you that we will actually generate it. So we've got this converter over here. Let me see, where is this? Okay, it should be already deleted. Uh-huh, perfect. And this is what we see. So we clearly see anything. So this is nothing. So I refreshed it, it is already deleted. Okay, so we have no Mimi in converter folder. So what I'm going to do, of course, I'm going to execute this macro on the server just because I can, because WinWars is starting as a comb, and that stuff can easily get executed on the server side. So file is uploaded, and then Mimi is back. So because we are running this as a local system, let me refresh it, Control F5, we can clearly grab the information from this professional doc to PDFs converter like that. And what do we see over here? It's all of the user's passwords, because we know clearly how Mimikatz works, that are executed from the memory of the local security authority subsystem. Next thing. This is like, no, but this is terribly wrong. Let's make it, obviously, the application's pool identity. So we're going to go to advanced settings, and we're going to say, we don't want to run it as a local system. We want to use the application's pool identity. What's that? This is very basically the account that has a pretty much similar privileges as a network service, and it runs as a virtual account with the name of the application pool. So the account that it's going to run on, it's going to be converted. I will show you this in a moment. So when we have it like this, the next thing that we can do, we can obviously delete Mimi and see if on the application's pool identity, it gets generated again, and it shouldn't. So this body, we can, of course, copy, and I'm going to close it, and let me query it back again. So we don't have Mimi over here. I'm browsing this, bank, open, and loading this as the application's pool identity. Oh, something went wrong. Let me basically do IIS reset, and let's see how we are able, of course, to run it one more time. That happens to this application, yes? Because we've got comms underneath, it's a long story, yes? So now let's run the application again, and let's do the same thing. So demo, bank, and let's do convert. And now, of course, the file is uploaded, but the Mimi, oh, in our case, it's back. Good. But the question is, can we see the content? And the answer is, we don't see the passwords. We got only the personal user certificates. Well, only. But still, we still got them. And the reason why we got them, and everything is OK, is because the application's pool identity was running the Mimikatz. But because application's pool identity is a network service, he cannot analyze local security authority subsystem. Therefore, the passwords are not there. But the macro was executed. So now, conclusion is very simple. As long as we run stuff on the, in this particular case and always, limited account on the server, this is always a very good approach. Sounds like an obvious thing, but not really. Let me show you something quite not okay. So let me dig in to the Node 3. The reason why I'm running this on a Node 3, because I would like to show you the 2014 4113 vulnerability that happened on the 14th of October, 2 weeks ago. If you did not patch your systems within the past 2 weeks, do it. I don't know what else I can add. Let's dig in. And let's see, of course, what we can get. So I'm going to browse. This is pretty much the same app like we see. Yes? And I'm going to, I divided it into two stages, the attack into two stages. The reason why it's like this is because I would like to show you clearly how things are working step by step. I'm going to go to C Windows temp. And as you see, there is nothing. The first thing that I'm doing step by step, I'm going to browse here, and I'm going to load, in this particular case, specific documents. Let me see where I got them. Let me see. They are in demo one, demo two. Yes, so let's go here, open. And then I'm going to convert it. So what's going to appear underneath, so convert, it should be the result of the macro execution. We've got some temp file, and we have downloaded, and this is what I was doing for the last time, downloaded some executables from the remote location. So we've got some CQ dumper. Okay, so this is the stage number one, to download files. Can the application spool identity like network service do that? Of course it can, because it has the permissions to write in his own folder. The question is, are we able to execute it somehow? And if we do have a vulnerability, then yes. If we don't, then of course we cannot. That's what I just showed you within the previous demo. Normally, we cannot. But are we normally? That's a different story. So things are not quite right. I'm going to go to application that we called Panda. And within this particular application, so I call this demo things that are not quite right. No. Okay. So let's dig in. In a www root, Panda, I get mimi.txt. I'm going to delete it. Punk. And recycle bin, of course. Yes, refresh it, nothing. So what I'm going to do over here, I'm going to specify here the path where I was downloading the file, so C Windows temp, and then CQ dumper.exe. And what's going to happen underneath is going to be really tricky. I got here in the back sysmon running. It's going to be actually pretty interesting to see that. Because this authentication and elevation within the process, let's do create process as APO identity, allows us to impersonate ourselves into from application spool identity directly to anti-authority system. So what's wrong? So basically, we can of course check if Mimi is back. Mimi is back, and I can show you right now that here, of course, we've got some information about the user's password, like we've got over here. Yeah? So we could display this as we did before on the web page. You see? So what was happening? Let me show you this in a kind of tricky way. I got here worker process. And worker process is running as IIS app pool panda. We see that? Of course we do. Yes? This particular application pool identity, I'm going to right-click miscellaneous. This is the process hacker that can do this. Run as this user. And I'm going to start the command prompt as the application's pool identity. Who am I? Panda. Yes? So what I'm going to do right now, let me go to the Panda exploit and show you this clearer, in a little bit clearer way, dear. So how the Panda exploit works and what I did. You see, remember I'm Panda. Have a look. Net user. I am not Panda, by the way. Net user. Let's dig in. Mm-hmm. Oh, this, okay, now, net user. And then let's say Paula. Paula 1, password, at. Yeah, access is denied. Because I'm just an application for identity. Now, Win64, it is actually a new exploit. CMD.exe, bank. Who am I? Oh my gosh. Yeah, a good reaction. Yeah, I mean, this is not good, by the way. But I'm not quite sure, you know. Okay, so yes, what is the solution to this? Yes, first of all, patch your web servers, because these are the ones that are on the edge. Sounds like another cliche, like patch your web servers, how many times I hear it, yes? Okay, but 2 weeks ago, there was a thing like this. This is the vulnerability that is working within win32k.sys. And because within the kernel mode, we are able to elevate ourselves very directly to the little bit higher privileges. Make sense? Okie dokie. Let's move on. Okay. Of course, another thing, clearly saying, centralize your logs. This is a very simple advice. Whenever someone, of course, like a hacker, I was showing yesterday EVTX Eater, remember that tool? That was deleting the single entries from EVTX files. Yes, pretty hard to write. But still, what we were able to do, we were able to cheat on the logs. Don't get me wrong, it's not obvious, but it was possible. So what kind of stuff we were able to do? Basically, we were able to play a little bit with the logs as a hacker, with sysmon logs, and we are able to overwrite the sysmon log and flood it. And then the question is, will we able to get this kind of information somewhere cached within our logs and save them from being flooded? Of course, centralization is the key to success. So whenever we are thinking about different kinds of log flooding, let's dig in. So view full screen mode. Over here, very good. we've got here, I got a tiny PowerShell script that is actually overusing a little bit sysmon logs. So as you see, I am within the loop, well, maybe not 10 times, but 100 times or 1,000 times to the edge of the log, changing the file. Sysmon is monitoring the file changes. So if I do that kind of touch to the file all the time, I'm going to overwrite all the events till the log rolls over. And now you will never see anything. So can we float a sysmon log like this? Of course we can, and that's what we're going to do. Yes? So I'm going to run the event viewer. And within the event viewer, I would like to show you, of course, how this log looks like. So chop, 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 quickly, let's get into the Microsoft Windows, and this is the sysmon log, yes? Sysmon, 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 yes? Very good. And we've got operational log. And that particular log has some run event, two, process creation, file creation time changed. We've got the process create logs, as you see. So everything is very clear. Okay, the question is, if I run that whole thing within the PowerShell, so let me copy this clearly from Notepad, so let me do that. La la la, Control A, Control C, or maybe I can just change it over here, so I'm going to specify 100 events, Control A, Control C, and I'm going to paste it here, enter. What's going to happen is that my log, you've got, as you see, there is a bunch of events that are new, quite a lot, and I'm going to refresh it, and if you have a look, all of the logs, they do have a very much similar date and time, of course. Yes? So because what I did, I'm floating the log. Log, of course, has its own limits. So in our case, it is 64 megabytes. So this is something that we can override. The key to that is the synchronization of this log somewhere else and monitoring and streaming all of the events somewhere else. Of course, it's getting big. But that's fine, as long as we've got the information that is consistent. What kind of stuff we can use to that? Well, that's going to be a simple demonstration, because for that, we're going to use nothing but a subscription. And what I did on the DC level, I have subscribed to sysmon logs, and everything, of course, that I'm getting here, this is the information that I'm actually getting about only one tiny type of log. We can, as you see, only the process create. How am I doing this? Let me show you. If I go to subscription, I can subscribe to the different kind of event. And if I go to advanced, unfortunately, guys, oh, not here, but select events. If I go to select events, one tiny tip. If you're going to be subscribing to sysmon logs, it's better to define it like this, because sysmon is not a typical log operating system logs. So you need to define it manually within the XML. It's very easy to do that. And as you see, I'm actually subscribing only to event ID number one. So floating, I don't care. I got what I need. So this is a simple thing, simple tip, how we are able, of course, to prevent the situations like that. Okay, guys, let's dig in. The next thing that I would like to talk about is basically Emmet. And Emmet is the solution that is pretty popular, just a few words, that allows us to monitor the unusual application behaviors. So if application, for example, is vulnerable to any kind of types of injections, like heap spraying and that kind of things, Emmet monitors this unusual usage, for example, of the stack, of the heap, and so on, and it allows us to prevent a certain application from running. Let me, of course, show you how the Emmet works. From the performance perspective, of course, Emmet is very good. It's not a session about Emmet, by the way. We could talk about it for hours. I just want to show you what kind of things we can implement to prevent different kinds of attacks on the server. So this is basically how we're gonna play right now. So let's dig in. So on my machine, I get running Emmet. Emmet has two modes that it can run in. One is the system mode, another one is the application mode. And system mode and application mode, particularly application mode, defines as the application that we want to, that we are statistically playing with, the most used applications. I don't need to have Adobe Reader, but Adobe Reader is defined, just in case, of course, I have it. If you want to monitor different kinds of applications over here, you need to add your own application, and if this application is going to misbehave, then Emmet will capture it and it will prevent it from launching. Let me show you how it works. First of all, and let me go to see Emmet. Here we go, we got it. I got here the small executable, and that executable normally runs. All your bases are belong to us, whatever. Yes, it normally runs, but it uses illegal activities that MS is configured to monitor. So in this particular case, it's actually using the load library activity. And whenever that is happening, and whenever we are loading the library from the external resource, like for example from the network, the Emmet will block it because it's not the regular situation. So how to do that? Well, very simply, I'm going to add the application over here and specify in Emmet monitoring of this body over here. Perfect. Monitored. I'm monitoring everything that I need. Okay. And now, double click prevents me from running. In the right bottom corner, you see that the load lib, so the loading library, was prevented because application was trying to misbehave. The same situation happens whenever you are trying to load any kind of, so don't send, any kind of specific extensions, so for example, like Flash and so on, in the files like Word Viewer, show all settings, and over here, if I go to the bottom, I am preventing, for example, from Word loading Flash. And when you open the Word document, this Flash will never run. It's going to be blocked by Emmet. As simple as this, yes? I do have a Flash like this, Emmet is responding, and that will never run. So it's very cool, and it's even lighter than Sysmon. Why not to use that? It's very good, and it's designed to be managed by administrators centrally within the infrastructure. Okay, guys. The next thing that we've got, it's actually really, really simple case. And this is malicious file review. There are many things that we can, of course, play within the PDFs and DocX and so on. I would like to show you one example that is basically related. Well, first of all, how to monitor malicious PDFs, because extracting macros is kind of simple, yes? We can always rename the file from .x to .zip, and then delete the binary files, and then the macro is removed. Or eventually, you can use things like Office malware scanner, and then you are able to scan the certain document, if there is a macro or not, and save it and analyze it later without opening any Word. But PDF, it's quite challenging sometimes. So whenever your users are asking the questions to you, how to analyze the malicious PDF, we can do this pretty easily. And let me, of course, run it, run the whole solution. And I'm going to do this with the fantastic, beloved by everyone, Python, okay? Yes, Python, everybody loves Python, I'm sure. And let me see, of course, what we can do. So I'm going to use the tool here that is called DDIR. It's actually the Python analyzer. It's called pdfid.py. And what do you need to have it to set up the Python correctly? Of course, you need to install Python. My small recommendation, maybe you know, it's the 32-bit is a little bit better because it has a little bit more extensions. And pdfid, it's a Python tool that allows you to scan information about what is within the certain file. And I'm going to, of course, run it against secret.pdf.vir. It is the PDF file that contains the JavaScript that when the user opens it, it's going to execute malicious PDF. So let's dig in. Yes, what kind of information we're going to get basically from that? So now we see the statistics. And whenever there is, of course, something inside the PDF, like, for example, open action, this is the indirect statement that we've got something wrong within the executable. Because when you open the PDF, nothing should happen besides opening a PDF. Of course, if you had all zeros over there, the PDF will not be a PDF, because PDF with zero pages, it's not very malicious, yes? So basically, this is something that we've got. The next thing that I'm going to do, of course, I can search for the JavaScript. So search equals JavaScript. Enter. And let's see, of course, if we do have that kind of information over there. Oh, sorry, my mistake. Not this tool. But in our case, of course, it's going to be PDF, and then it's parser, PDF parser, .py, bunk. And then we are scanning if there's any kind of JavaScript engaged within the file. And in our case, it's nothing. Okay, what kind of other stuff we can have? I can, of course, search for the same type of information in our case within the, and I got some example, and this is the example like this, so this is the X12 and so on. And within the PDF parser, we can also search for JavaScript. Let's run this. And this is exactly what we see over here. So there is actually something that is executing. And we've got some shell code, and we can, of course, decode the whole stuff. So PDF, it's not an easy format. We are always able, of course, to search through the file structure, and that's why we've got a Python files to do this for you. If you ever wondered, and your users are asking you the questions, how to analyze the malicious PDF and so on, you got, hopefully, the solution. Okie dokie. The next thing, just to mention a few things that we've got, is, of course, data caching. And the data caching, oh, within this, actually, I got a small question for you. And data caching, basically what I mean is that whenever, and there's one policy, whenever we are having the default policy with the cache logons, how many items by default are cached? 10. Thank you so much. So I got another question for you guys. Whenever you've got cache logons, and you can, of course, change this value, what is the maximum completely amount of caches that we can cache? The maximum. Short something. No. Unlimited it's not.
256.
256, no. A little bit less. Somebody said 50?
Four.
Who said 50? You said 50. Okay. So let's say you said 50. So here comes the thing. What? Because I got another gift for you. What you gonna get? That's the question. What he's gonna get? Do you know what the Poland is famous for?
Sausage.
Okay. I usually tend to bring sausage, but I must tell you that on the presentations, when I was bringing sausage, I'm on a diet right now. Yes. And when I was bringing those sausages, I was eating about half of the sausages that I had for you in the room. So I don't want to give you sausage anymore. But I want to give you something special, and this is something that is healthy food. And if you're going to be doing the server hardening, you can basically, and fight all these monkeys, you can do this with this. So this is to be fixed thing, yes? We've got a Halloween, it has no eyes, it's not a holy pumpkin. You can make it holy. Thanks. You can make a pumpkin soup, you know, surprise your wife and that kind of stuff. Okay, so data caching. This is just to mention, yes? Remember about the policy for cache logons. There is a, within the security policy, there is a policy, and this is the most important recommendation from us to mention. That particular policy, the cache logons that is by default set to 10, set it to 1 or 0. The reason why we are saying this is because through this whole conference, we've been talking about pass the hash attack. This is coming from somewhere, isn't it? So pass the hash attack is clearly happening from the hashes being cached in the registry because you log on to the certain computer. By default, I mean, sincerely, in our customers, 100% of our customers has this policy configured by default. That means that if you want to do the pass the hash in 100% of the customers, we could do that, and we did. So this policy, caching credentials, should be definitely changed to 0 or 1. That depends, of course, how you would like to act with that. Okay, guys. The last thing to talk about, that is very, very short, it is nothing but using the, not this one, using the host-based firewall. And whenever we are about to use it like that, the reason why I'm saying this is because host-based firewall And again, it sounds like, whoa, something obvious. Host-based firewall, it is something that allows us to prevent different kinds of communications from the servers. And let me show you, of course, how does this work. So basically, what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna, in this case, let me log on. Mm-hmm. This is gonna be the victim. The client is clearly the victim. And that particular client is actually managed remotely by the malware. And that particular malware that we've got, in our case, it is basically allowing us to serve the commands to the user. So how these commands are basically working? Very, very easily. So malware typically, it's the communication from the outside. So this is the control command. And if I want to, for example, and this is the NOP command, submit certain query, I'm able to, of course, send a certain type of communication to the client. If I would like to, for example, use the air command and cmd slash c net user, for example, or whoami.txt, so let me save it like this, so whoami just a command, and stream it to, let's say, whoami.one.txt, I can submit that query, and I'm gonna, on the C drive, on the client side, let's see if this is basically working. So submit query, yes, dear. We've got here, who am I one? So I'm clearly controlling this workstation. It's just created. The thing is that on the client firewall, there is a bunch of rules that you can configure, the outbound rules. So how the clients are coming out to the network. And in our case, what I have configured three rules. One rule is allowing Internet Explorer. Another rule, it's allowing, in this particular case, it is the file IELOUtil to download files from the internet. And what else I'm allowing the communication, the whole communication within the subnet. So logic is as follows. If the client is communicating only through Internet Explorer, this is the only communication that client can produce to the internet, to the world, only through Internet Explorer. But the rest of the communication can happen only within the local subnet. So DNS and all the things that you are normally using like this is gonna work like a charm. Everything just because of the outbound rules. So let me allow those rules. So enable rule, and enable rule, and enable rule. And let's see if I am able to control this workstation more from the solution. Yeah, okay. And next thing that I'm gonna change, one more thing, I'm sorry, is that I'm gonna, within the firewall, change, of course, the default rule that is quite important, that by default, I am blocking all of the outbound connections on the domain profile. So what is only allowed to go to the world, it's Internet Explorer, eventually, and if it's about the other type of communication triggered by the service, like we had in our malware, we will be basically not allowing this. So here, let me see if there's something that we can do. So R in our case, cmd slash c, and let's, of course, do hostname, like we did last time, and let's stream it to c hostname txt. And if I submit query, client is not allowed to communicate with me if the communication does not come from the Internet Explorer. And it doesn't. Great. So if I go to view, view and full screen mode, here basically, if we could check out what is on the C drive, we can clearly see no host name instead of the thing that we created before. Everything, it's thanks to the firewall configured properly and taking into consideration the outgoing rules. Everybody says that, the Windows client firewall is such a lame thing. It's not when you configure it properly. So, bam, bam, bam. We talk about different kinds of steps, actually in total 9 steps, how we're able to take the approach to harden our infrastructures. We started from the DNS queries, we went through a bunch of vulnerabilities, we were discussing the sanitization of the data, we were discussing, of course, things like Emmet, things like Sysmon, how we are able to establish the proactive monitoring, how we are able, of course, to remove the hashes from the registry. So there is a plenty of things that we've got. One more request to take and take away for you when you leave this room, because today is the last day of the conference. Please download from the internet, my personal request, the top 10 hardening tips. Take the half of it, implement it, and take one or two things coming out from this session and think if you can apply them in your infrastructure. Because from the penetration tester's perspective, this is what we considered that can be working and doing a good job from the security perspective. Thanks so much for coming. Of course, please, please fill out the evaluations. Have the great rest of the day. If you've got questions, I'm standing over here. Next session is going to be amazing, so make sure that you don't leave the room. And thank you so much.